Mix 104.1 New England Lifestyles. I want to take you back to my first moment of commercial radio. I'd been working at a radio station here in Boston, and it was my big chance because the midday person suddenly got sick. And my PD said, Mike, this is your chance. Why don't you go in and take over the shift? And I went in and walked in, turned on the mic, and suddenly I could not speak. My heart was beating through my chest. I had a full-blown panic attack to the point where I could not say anything. The PD walked in and said, look, you can do this. And I said, I can't. I felt like running. And he said, you can get through this. I did a terrible next break, and then I was through it. But I had never confronted panic attacks before. The anxiety of performing was overwhelming. I got through it, but boy, I had never experienced that before, and it was something that I'll never forget. The reason I bring this up is the fact that my guest today is clinical psychologist Dr. Scott Symington, and he is the author of a new book called Freedom for Anxiety, Thoughts and Feelings, a Two-Step Mindfulness Approach to Moving Beyond Fear and Worry. Dr. Symington, welcome to Mix 104.1.
Thanks, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, so that moment, I was not aware that panic attacks were something that had been in my entire family. When I talked to my parents afterwards, I said, oh yeah, me and Dad always had panic attacks, and your brother and sister have been treated for it. And I was like, I could have used that information. But it was but it was one of those most stunning moments where, you know, there's a lot of different anxieties. That is like an overwhelming anxiety that almost crippled me. I thought I was having a heart attack.
It's a terrifying experience, and what you're describing is the fight or flight response, which really is designed for those moments when your life is in danger and you need to take quick action, and it really doesn't lend itself to performing at our full capacity.
Yeah, I would say. As we talk today, I want to direct everybody to your website, which is drsymington.com, and that's SYMINGTON.com. There's a lot of info there. Tell me a little bit about anxiety, because, look, that was one part of it, and, you know, panic attacks are like an acute part of anxiety, but I think anxiety has become something that has really creeped into so many parts of our society. So many people deal with anxiety day to day. Tell me a little bit about this, because obviously it's your area of expertise.
Yeah, I mean, anxiety really is that experience of being under threat, and it shows up in different ways. So the example that you provided, part of what happened there is you were in a situation where which required you to perform at a high level, and it was really important to you, and that fight or flight response got triggered, and then you experienced that mental, emotional, and physical experience of being under threat. And the different ways that anxiety manifests itself is primarily through worrying. That's when we go away in our head and loop a concern to our mind over and over again. And usually it's about something that is important to us. Maybe it's health or our kids turning out okay or whether we're going to lose our job. The other way anxiety tends to manifest itself is just in the body, and you had a real bodily experience in the illustration you're giving, because you get a jolt of cortisol into your body, and that accelerates your heart rate, it draws blood to vital organs, it often upsets people's stomach, and there's body tension, and it's really a terrifying experience. But yeah, anxiety is a widespread issue and problem around the world, but particularly in the U.S., and we could get into why in particular in the U.S. it seems to be a bigger issue, but those are a couple of points.
And it's one of those things where it really, there are so many points that you can point to. You know, it's like if we allow anxiety to really control us, it can cripple us. I mean, when you think about it, I wake up in the morning and I'm having a stressful time getting my kids out of bed. I'm worried about how they're going to turn out. I'm wondering whether or not they're going to be ready for school. I drive to work. I have anxiety from all the insane people driving to work. I get to work and I hope I didn't screw anything up. And I'm like, oh my God, can you imagine if I lose my job? I get home and there's just so many things, trigger points that could cause people to have anxiety. And And one of the things I think that really is important is that there are things you can do to alleviate anxiety. Someone years ago showed me something which blew my mind, but it actually got me to a point where I found a way for me personally to pull out of some of the really high points of anxiety I had. And it was a really simple process. And it really tipped me off to the fact that you don't necessarily need, because when I had that panic attack, I went to a doctor and this guy said, well, why don't you take these pills for panic attacks? Mm-hmm. And then one day I went in, forgot the pills, didn't take them, and realized I didn't need them. And I was like, wow, okay. You know something, that's funny. I thought that that was the only way to deal with it. But then later on, I talked to someone who was a speech and diction teacher. And she taught me something which is one of the most important things that anyone ever taught me in college. And it was a breathing technique, which was almost like a self-hypnosis, where I get out of myself for the moment, concentrated on something in my head with my eyes closed, breathed slowly, breathed in and out at a certain level, and it brought my heart rate down, it chilled me out, and it caused me to completely come out of the anxiety moment. And I'm sure there are many ways people can approach getting rid of anxiety in ways other than drugs. Talk about that a bit.
Yeah, no, there are. And what you're describing is a breathing exercise where you activated the parasympathetic nervous system, where you calmed the central nervous system and the arousal. But I think the piece that's really important for people to understand is that thoughts and feelings and physical sensations, so all these different things that can show up inside us or thoughts that can come into our mind, they need energy just like everything else on the planet to keep going. And so thoughts and feelings, especially those problematic ones, we want to make sure that we are relating to them, that we are reacting to them in a way where we don't give them energy. And there are three primary sources of energy from which thoughts and feelings draw fuel. Preoccupied attention, so when you go away in your mind with a concern and run it through over and over and over again, especially when you're in a worry loop, that gives it energy and makes it more prominent inside you. The other form of energy that thoughts and feelings draw from is resistance, our fight against that anxious experience or that threatening idea in our mind. It's that, oh no, experience, like I can't feel this or I can't live with that idea out there. That resistance, that reactivity also gives it energy. And then the third source, and I assume because I'm talking to you on the phone, this was not an issue for you, which is avoidance behaviors. When people have a panic attack or something creates fear in them, they naturally want to avoid that trigger, avoid that fear experience. But then what happens is they invite more fear and anxiety into their life because they're basically colluding with their threat center and saying, yes, that is a threat. So if we get near there or I get in that situation again, please send me a signal in the form of anxiety to protect me, and you basically reinforce kind of the threat status of whatever that avoided activity or issue is.
It's almost like, you know, because we're so stressed out about that situation, we get ourselves into a more stressful situation worrying about the stress of the situation. There's no way we can avoid being in that. I mean, it's crazy. It's such a vicious circle, the anxiety thing. You know, I see it in my own kids. You know, they have homework, and the idea of just getting it started creates more anxiety than the actual homework. You know what I mean? It's like,
absolutely.
It's amazing how much we build up our anxiety into something far bigger than the monster of the stress of doing something is worse than the actual issue of doing it.
Yeah, we call that anticipatory anxiety, and anticipatory anxiety is often the worst part of it. The actual activity is easier, but the way we build it up in our minds, yes, is often creates a lot more internal torture for people.
What are some of the things we can do? I mean, how do you feel about the drugs people prescribe for that? I mean, I'm not a person sitting here trying to say, you know, I mean, I know that it's been said that we're over-medicated, but I know that there are some drugs which really help people out. But for the most part, I'm the type of guy who tries to avoid medication as much as possible. I like to look at food and exercise as the best type of medicine. What's your perspective on medicines and how are other ways we can treat anxieties besides the idea of going to a bottle?
Yeah, so let me just briefly address what we can do to lower anxiety without medication, and then let's talk for a moment about, okay, when do you integrate an anti-anxiety medication, and when is that helpful and when is it not? So some of the specific things that we can do to lower anxiety besides a healthy diet and regular exercise is engaging in evidence-based practices for lowering our everyday stress and anxiety level. Some of that is learning relaxation training, practicing mindfulness. You did a combination of those two things with your breathing technique. And then also, and probably one of the most important things, because it's the hardest to apply, which is relating to anxious thoughts and feelings in a way where they have less power over you. So when they do show up, because we can't really control that worry coming into our mind or that anxious feeling showing up inside us, but what we can do is learn how to relate to it in a way where it fades into the background, where it dissipates. And I'm sure our conversation is going to go in this direction, but that's why I developed a user-friendly application of mindfulness called the two-screen method, which shows you what to do inside your head to diffuse those anxious thoughts and feelings when they show up. And I'm happy to get into more details of that.
Well, that's fantastic. And again, you know, if you're just tuning in to Mix 104.1, I'm Mike Mullaney, and we're discussing anxiety with Dr. Scott Symington, who's the author of a book called Freedom from Anxiety, Thoughts and Feelings. It's a two-step approach to mindfulness and moving beyond fear and worry. And you know, again, millions of Americans are dealing with anxiety. But, you know, someone once taught me, as I mentioned earlier, how to kind of get out of the moment and just focus on just chilling out. There are things you can do, and you say you have this method, which I'm intrigued with, because again, you know, it's like the same way that we allow nervousness and anxiousness to kind of drive us insane, we can also, we have tools. Our body is the greatest machine we'll ever deal with, and if we approach, you know, anxiety with a plan that relies on what we have in our own bodies and our own minds, it's going to be something which is invaluable. I cannot tell you how many times I've used that technique that Dr. Susan Ramtick taught me at Bridgewater State College in 1991. It's one of the greatest. I always say that I have a great college education, but the single greatest lesson was a simple breathing technique and the way to chill out in it. So tell
Isn't
me a little bit.
Amazing of, how it, one intervention yeah. can make such a difference.
And it can. So tell me a little bit about your approach and how you came to it and how people would employ it. Because again, I'm sure it's in the book, which the book is out now, sir?
Yes, it is. Yeah, right. Freedom from Anxious Thoughts and Feelings. It features this method the two-screen method, which is a user-friendly application of mindfulness, which nice. I'm happy to describe.
Yeah, please do.
So the method starts with a way of conceptualizing your internal world. You imagine your internal world, so all the different thoughts and feelings that can show up inside you, as a media room with two screens. And on the forward-facing wall is the front screen. The front screen is where you experience the present moment. It's the more life-giving and positive thoughts, feelings, images. It's all of that internal activity that translates into a sense of contentment and connection, and that you're basically in a good space. And we all instinctually are trying to hang out on the front screen. If you're in your car right now, the front screen in that situation is just the road ahead of you and this broadcast and listening to this conversation. So in this media room, in your mind, you've got the front screen. But off to the right, there's a challenge, and that's where the side screen is. And the side screen is where the threats, fears, insecurities, and potentially destructive thoughts and feelings show up. So with the two-screen method, and I don't know how much time we have. I'd be happy to give an illustration.
Yeah, please do. Please do.
Okay. So I'll give the overview, and then we'll do a brief illustration.
I like
so
it.
With the two-screen method, you first learn how to relate to those challenging thoughts and feelings showing up on the side screen in a way where they will dissipate and fade into the background. And then the second step of the method is giving you some anchors to stay more tethered to the front screen. So as an illustration, let's say you walk away from a awkward social exchange, and then you hop in your car, and you're trying to hang out on the front screen. Your attention is forward, and suddenly that side screen lights up, and your attention swivels over to look, and scrolling across the screen is, gosh, that was such a stupid thing to say. And then on that side screen, you start replaying those social tapes, that pregnant pause and the look on their face and then what you said. And as you sit there hanging out on the side screen, those worries, that insecure feeling gets intense and bigger, and that side screen enlarges. And if you hang out there too long, because you're energizing it with your preoccupied attention and reactivity, kind of wrestling with it, before you know it, you're going to have an IMAX theater with Dolby surround sound. It's going to be very hard for you to rotate back to the front screen.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
So with the two-screen method, step one is applying the principle of accept and redirect. You redirect your attention to the front screen. So if you're in your car, the road ahead in this conversation, while allowing the tape to be run in your peripheral vision. That doesn't mean you like it or agree with it, but you don't fight its presence because that would give it energy. And when your eyes wander back to that side screen, you keep gently redirecting back to the front screen. And then the second step is in the book, I lay out three primary anchors that help you stay more tethered to the front screen when there's a pull on your mind to go away and worry on the side screen.
Okay. That's good stuff. I mean, what are some of those things that are typically on a well-adjusted person's front screen that can pull you back in? Because if I have that conversation with, you know, the regional manager of the company and I say something idiotic and I get in my car and I'm like, oh, my God, what did I just do? How do you get back
so just
over there?
A brief overview, because I have a chapter on each front screen, but as a brief overview, one anchor is mindfulness skills. So it's learning how to be more present moment focused, because you can't have your attention in the present moment and be hanging out on the side screen at the same time. So it's almost like leaning forward with your attention and bringing consciousness out more externally instead of going away in your head. And mindfulness is a muscle set that you can develop over time, and there's many, many benefits to doing that. Another anchor is just engaging in a healthy distraction or activity, just going somewhere else with your attention, life energy to protect your mind from energizing that side screen. And the third one of my personal favorites, is something called loving action. And I take people through a process where they sort of identify when they're the best versions of themselves, what kind of things they're doing in the world, especially in this category of loving behaviors. And they use the side screen as a reminder and as tailwind, a springboard, if you will, to express the best parts of themselves. So when you're in your car, that side screen lights up, and you're like, oh, gosh, you know, why did I say that? That becomes a reminder to send an encouraging text to a friend or engage in some act of kindness or think about someone else going through a hard time. So you create a new association. You actually use that side screen, which has usually been detrimental, as tailwind to express the best parts of who you are. And it's deeply satisfying when you can do that.
It's funny, as you were describing that second step in those actions, I think it's one of the reasons that so many people like going golfing, because when you go golfing, all you can think about is the golf. You cannot think of anything else, because if you do, you're off the course. You know what I mean?
And it's 100%.
It's one of those great things where if you can distract yourself, like if you go for a run, it's an interesting place because you're physically challenging yourself, but you also have a lot of time in your own head. But with a game like golf, it's very different. You have to be thinking of only golf in that moment, which I think is why it's such a great sport. That's wild.
Yeah, for me, it's tennis. I totally relate to that.
Yeah, and it's all you can think of. If you take your mind off the ball, you're dead. Six love, mm-hmm. six love, you're out of here. Get off the court. And that's really good stuff. And again, you know, as we discuss it here, I want to remind everybody that they can get a lot of information about what Dr. Symington is doing at the website, drsymington.com, S-Y-M-I-N-G-T-O-N. And the cool thing is there's a quiz there that talks about how you can figure stuff out. It talks a lot about, there are blogs, which are really, really nice. It's funny, as you talked about mindfulness, the first thing I think of, and I'm sure many people will say this to you, is being a Star Wars fan, I always felt like they were all about mindfulness, the Jedi Knights. Stay in the moment, to keep your mind here.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. Yeah, mindfulness is, it's tricky because it's hard to define and it's used in a lot of different contexts. I'm using it in the context of psychology, which is really about learning how to be more present moment focused and relating to challenging thoughts and feelings in a way where they have less power over you. So in the field of psychology, those are the predominant pillars of mindfulness.
It's good stuff. Well, again, the name of the book is Freedom from Anxiety, Thoughts and Failings, a two-step mindfulness approach for moving beyond fear and worry. Doctor, it has been a pleasure talking to you. I really appreciate everything. And again, it's amazing what you can do if you know the steps on how to take control of yourself just with physical gifts that we already have.
Mike, it's been a pleasure being with you. And great conversation.
I appreciate it, sir. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.